This is Paul Puckett, and welcome back to Getting There, the money show that focuses on your life. Today, we're going to focus on something that you will be looking forward to if you're not already there that happens later in your life, something called Social Security. You know, there are a lot of misconceptions about what Social Security was originally created to do, how the program works, what it actually does today, and where the money that you contribute to Social Security is actually held. So we're going to spend a little time looking back at 1933 when the Social Security Act was passed. We're going to have a little music. One of the things I love about this show is I like to share music I know, but I also like to go look for music that fits the theme of whatever it is that I'm talking about. Now, believe it or not, there are songs about Social Security. And what's interesting, the best one I found, unfortunately, I can't play. It's copyrighted beyond anything I can access. But I'll put a link to that song on the website. But there are other songs I can play. But let's talk a little bit before we play the first song about what Social Security was originally intended to do. At the time when the Social Security Act was passed, the Great Depression had occurred just a few years before, and we were actually still working our way out of the Great Depression. People reached a certain age where, of course, they could not work. And so the government created a program to take care of those people, because at the time, prior to Social Security, what would happen is, generally speaking, when people could no longer work, they just live with their kids, and their kids would take care of them. There's nothing wrong with that, of course, but there are circumstances where maybe that's not possible. So Social Security was created for those people who were lucky enough to live long enough to where they couldn't work. And back then, it was a small percentage of people who made it to the age of 65. So the program was intended to take care of this small percentage of people when they reach that age. Of course, since then, there are a lot of people that reach 65. As a matter of fact, almost half the country is totally dependent on Social Security in retirement. Another 25%. It's not that they don't have other money, but it is their primary source of money. Only about 25% of Americans are able to fund their own retirement. So let's open with a song about Social Security and what it was originally intended to do.
You work hard for a living until you get old, and sometimes they push you right out of the cold. When your working time's through, you don't want charity. You'd like to retire with some dignity. And you're too old to work, too old to work. When you're too old to work and you're too young to die, who will take care of you? How'll you get by when you're too old to work and you're too young to die? They put horses to pasture, they feed them on hay. Even machines get retired someday. The boss gets a pension when he is too old. You helped him retire, you're out in the cold. And you're too old to work, too old to work. When you're too old to work and you're too young to die, who will take care of you? How'll you get by when you're too old to work and you're too young to die? There's no easy answer, there's no easy cure. Dreaming won't change it, that's one thing for sure. But fighting together, we'll get there someday. And when we have won, we'll no longer say, too old to work, too old to work, when you're too old to work and you're too young to die. Who will take care of you? How'll you get by when you're too old to work and you're too young to die? When you're too old to work and you're too young to die.
And that was Joe Glazer, a singer, songwriter, folk song guy, mainly political songs. And Joe Glazer recorded that with Smithsonian Folkways. I'll put a link up on the website about, well, what happens when you're too old to work? That's why Social Security was created. Now, of course, since then, it's become more than just a retirement plan provided by the government with a guarantee of lifetime income. It's also now covering disability. It has benefits for survivors, like widows and children. And I'm not saying any of those things are a bad thing, but I am saying since it began, it has, in fact, expanded dramatically. So you hear periodically political arguments about Social Security. You hear one political party or the other stole the money from Social Security and spent it on something else, and that's why we have a problem. It's not actually not possible for the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or a party that may be created after this year's election, sorry, couldn't resist, to steal money from the Social Security program because of the way Congress set it up in 1933 as signed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The program, this is all publicly available information. One of the things that I wish I could say amuses me is the amount of misinformation you see in media, in news, on blogs, on social networking sites, where people will make flat statements that are easily verified or contradicted by a simple Google search, and you can go straight to the source. So if you did not know, everything you ever wanted to know about Social Security is available at www.ssa.gov, G-O-V. SSA, of course, being Social Security Administration. You can look at the trustees report that shows everything owned by the trust funds. You can get a full description of how those trust funds are set up. I'm on that site now, so why don't we take a little glance here at the Social Security Trust Funds. And you know what? Maybe before we do that, we should quickly go over what Social Security was created to do. And I should also correct the year that it went into effect. I said 1933 from memory. I'm thinking of a different act that involves investing. But at any rate, the Social Security Act actually was placed into law in 1935. And the intention of Social Security was to take care of those 65 or older who were no longer working and handle supplement in some way their retirement. Now, it also provided for old age assistance, unemployment insurance, aid to dependent children, and provided for grants to the states to provide various forms of medical care. And that's the original Social Security Act. Since then, of course, the program has been expanded for disability and for all sorts of specific purposes to help people in the United States who have either contributed to Social Security or possibly haven't. And we hear so much, as I said earlier, about the Social Security status that you may wonder, well, where do I get information that's not biased? Well, you go to SocialSecurityAdministration.gov, SSA.gov, and it will link you to the financial reports that show you how the program works. However, you have to have a little bit of insight. So getting back to these Social Security trust funds and whether any party is able to rob Social Security, which I see fairly regularly out there in the social media world. Okay, this is from SSA.gov. What are the Social Security Trust Funds? This is quoting from their website. The Social Security Trust Funds are made up of the Old Age and Survivors Insurance, or OASI, and the Disability Insurance, DI, Trust Funds. These funds are accounts that are managed by the United States Department of the Treasury. So what are their purposes? According to the website, one, they provide an accounting mechanism for tracking all of the income into and out of the fund, the disbursements. And secondly, they hold the accumulated assets, which provide for the spending authority to pay the benefits. So the Social Security Act limited trust fund expenditures just to benefits and the administrative cost of providing those benefits. Now, the funds, obviously, OASI, Old Age and Survivors Insurance, pays to retired workers, their families, and the families of deceased workers the benefits that are available to them under Social Security. And the Disability Insurance Trust Fund, or DI, pays to those that the government determines are disabled. All right, so we have these two funds. They're actually, I believe, more than that now, but I'm on their website, and I'm just going to cover those two. All of the funds administered by Social Security are limited in how they are invested. And this is where you have to use a little bit of common sense to understand why it's not possible for any Congress to steal from a Social Security trust fund. The trust funds are limited to investments in special issues of U.S. Treasury bills, United States Treasury bills, and these special issues are only available to the Social Security trust funds. In the past, they held special issue as well as marketable Treasury securities, and the real difference between a marketable Treasury security and the special issue securities that are held by the Social Security Trust Fund is the special issues are not marketable. They're only available to the Social Security Trust Fund. So what exactly is a special issue Treasury bond? Well, I just told you the difference is it's not marketable. It's also a Treasury security, meaning a bill, a note, or a bond. Now, we've talked a lot and probably will continue to do so in efforts to warn you all that if you're currently invested in bond funds, when interest rates go up, they are not safe. So we talked about how bonds perform. But maybe one thing I didn't cover is what exactly is a bond? Well, let's use an example of a corporate bond. So think of any company you wish. I'll just arbitrarily pick Apple Computer. Apple Computer, and I may not be picking a good choice. Let's go with somebody that I know issues lots and lots of bonds. How about a utility company? A Dominion Power, for those of you in Virginia, Florida Power and Light. When a company issues a bond, in essence, what they're doing is borrowing money. They give the buyer, the investor, a bond that says, hey, you gave us $10,000 and we will pay you 5% for the next 10 years. That would be a 10-year corporate bond. When you buy the bond, the company gets the money and then they pay you the interest until they redeem the bond after the time period, you know, of the bond. It's a 10-year bond, 10 years. All right. So who gets the money when a bond is purchased? The issuer of the bond does. Who issues Treasury bonds? Maybe we should listen to a song, because I know that's a really, really tough question. How about a little Merle Haggard?
Never enough play, and I'm tired. middle of Montana. And give me all I've got coming to me. And keep your retirement and your so-called social security. Big city turned me loose and set me free. Got a lot to show for anything I've done. There's folks who never work and they've got plenty. Think it's time some guys like us had some fun. Turn me loose, set me free, somewhere in the middle of give me all I've got coming to me. And keep your retirement and your so-called social security. Big city turned me loose and set me free.
Merle Haggard with his song Big City. Back in 1983, he performed that live at a place called Billy Bob's. Might have been a fun place to be back in 1983. So, what is this thing that he calls so-called Social Security? Well, it's invested in treasuries, and that very difficult question I asked you is if the person or the entity, the company, the government that issues a bond is the one that receives the money, then every time you contribute to Social Security, the government takes your money and invests it in U.S. government bonds, which are then placed into the Social Security Trust Fund. And the proceeds from the sales of those bonds goes to, drumroll please, the U.S. government. All right, this may be too simple to understand. Sometimes things are so simple that when you go to understand them, they seem complex. So here's what that basically means. When the government takes your Social Security contributions, they invest them in government bonds and receive the proceeds from the sale of those bonds. So in essence, they get your money every single time it's withdrawn from your paycheck. And it goes into the operating budget once those bonds are sold. So, well, when it comes time, they will pay back into the Social Security Trust Funds, cash to redeem the bonds that they bought from themselves. Now, I know you probably think Paul's making this up. He must be a Republican. Well, I'm not party affiliated, just for the record. Neither Republican nor Democrat, so you all can make fun of me whoever you are, unless you're an independent like me. So, what does all that mean, and does the Social Security Administration have on their website what I'm talking about? Yes, actually it does. On the trust fund facts at ssa.gov, why do some people describe the special issue securities held by the trust funds as worthless IOUs? What is Social Security Administration's reaction to this criticism? Well, let's see. I'll quote them. Money flowing into the trust funds is invested in U.S. government securities. Because the government spends this borrowed cash, some people say the trust fund's assets are just an accumulation of securities that the government will be unable to make good on in the future. Without legislation to restore long-term solvency of these funds, redemption of long-term securities prior to maturity would be necessary. Now, what they say is far from being worthless IOUs, the investments held by the trust funds are backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. The government has always repaid Social Security with interest. The special issue securities are therefore just as safe as U.S. savings bonds or other financial instruments the federal government that the federal government is also obligated to pay. Let's go back to the beginning of that answer. Because the government spends this borrowed cash, well, let's just stop there. When they buy their own bonds with your Social Security contribution, who gets the money? They do. Can't steal it. They've already gotten it. That's the way the program was created. That was the way the program was intended. That's the way the program works. Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but it should make one pause briefly when planning for your retirement. It may not be wise to put 100% of your faith in the Social Security trust funds. Now, am I predicting some massive collapse of the Social Security system? No, I don't think it will ever collapse. I think they will do what they need to do, as they did in 1982. For those of you that remember, Ronald Reagan and the Congress at the time, which I believe was a Democratic Congress, had to make some adjustments to Social Security because they were nearly depleted in 1982. However, as I'm predicting in the future, no beneficiary got shortchanged because Congress enacted temporary emergency legislation that permitted them to borrow from other federal trust funds and then later strengthen trust fund financing by raising Social Security rates. It only took them 4 years to get the borrowed accounts repaid, and they got it back on track. That may not be where we are today. So just to make it clear, I realize I'm being very repetitive. We're going to take a break in a second, but we'll still be talking about Social Security when we come back. I just want to make it clear, regardless of what your party affiliation is and what you think the government should or shouldn't do and what you think the future holds and yaddy daddy daddy, that's a direct quote from somebody probably I bumped into, because I really say yaddy daddy daddy. You can't steal money you already have. Social Security was created and limited to the purchase of treasury bonds in its portfolio. So from day one, every dollar contributed buys a treasury bond, and the treasury bond purchase money goes to the federal government for them to spend, which they're really good at. Let's take a break. I know what I think I want. I bet you all can guess. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. So before we move to, well, what does that all mean? Here's what I think, just as a personal opinion. You should plan on receiving Social Security. I'm serious, you should. You should also plan on making sure you provide funds yourself directly into your 401k, your retirement plan. I highly encourage a non-taxable a taxable approach as well, where you can put money in a regular brokerage account. Roth IRAs are great ideas. There's all sorts of ways to save for retirement. Bottom line is save. Create an emergency fund, do all those things, but don't assume you're not going to get Social Security. We're going to talk about claiming strategies in a minute in a very broad way. And I have another song I want to put in just for fun in a few minutes, but let's talk about what that song's about. You know, Social Security has become sort of a large bucket that distributes to the people it was originally intended for, those who work and contribute and retire on Social Security and their old age pension, as they call it. The families of those people who didn't work necessarily, but who were affected by their loved ones passing. And when I say didn't work, housewives work. You know, 100 years ago, a lot of women weren't in the workforce, but if you don't think they were working, they were. You know, getting back to the Merle Haggard song, they just weren't working for bosses. Merle Haggard's talking about Big City is the name of that song. And he says, you know, hey, your so-called Social Security, I just want to go out to Montana. 1920 was a big year that led to the creation of Social Security, because 1920 was the first time in U.S. history that more U.S. citizens lived in cities than on farms. Just a little trivia. And that was part of why Social Security got created. The big cities started to get full of people who were too old to work. Bottom line. Well, since then, our cities have also had people who are disabled and who need governmental aid or somebody's aid to get by. So, you know, when I was Googling to find songs about Social Security, I found a little bit more modern song about Social Security disability payments. Take a listen.
Yes, you can.
My dad said,
but I still got my Uncle Sam. He always lifts me up when I get into a jam.
What you gonna do
when your babies grow up? Knock her up once again. Knock her up again.
Social.
Yeah.
Social Security. Give me some of that social.
Give it to me.
Give me some government cheese. Give me some of that social.
I'm dead broke like Bill and Hillary.
Don't be ashamed, throw your cards up high.
Repeat after me and say SSI.
SSI!
Yeah, you know I'm with it. The sky's the limit when you're on public assistance. I used to work like a jerk, but now I hate it. Self-reliance is overrated. We're the 47% and almost the majority.
And now they're saying that they can't afford to be supporting me.
I think I know what it means to be a citizen living in the home. I turned unemployment into enjoyment. There's a war on poverty and I'm on unemployment. I hate to go, but I got an appointment.
Why for?
Cause I'm going to get a little bit of that.
Social.
A little bit of that.
Social Security. Give me some of that social. Give me some government cheese. Give me some of that social.
Social
Security. Give me some of that social.
That was Curtis Gump presenting Social Security, published September 7th, 2014, as you might have guessed from some of the lyrics, which are very, they mention Obama, President Obama, and Other things that you know probably would not have been in a song that was written prior to 2009 or 8. So what is this Social Security? Give me some of that. Well, you know, that's becoming a bigger issue, is how do we determine who qualifies for Social Security? How do we determine that we have enough money coming into Social Security to fund all these things? Not saying that we shouldn't do it. I'm actually just taking a financial position on this. We need to make sure it's adequately funded. Now, you know what you contribute from your paychecks to Social Security, I'm sure. Or do you? When you see that, combined with FICA, that 7.625% coming out of your paycheck, you do realize that's only half, right? Your employer, or you if you're self-employed, cover the other 7.625%, which last time I checked is 15.3%. Did I do the math right just then? Yes, I think I did. At any rate, when Social Security was originally enacted, it was 1% from the employee and 1% for the employer, for a total of 2%. So over the past century, almost a century, we've gone from 2% to over 15%. I'd say you might want to anticipate it climbing again so that we have adequate funds to distribute to those who have earned the right through their contributions or through the fact that they're U.S. citizens to have access to social insurance through Social Security. So therefore, what you need to know is nobody stole the money. It's the way the program was structured. Isn't that interesting? Okay, how many of you on a regular basis receive invitations from somebody somewhere on come to our Social Security seminar? I'd ask you to raise your hand, but well, if I could see you, it would weird you out that I could. And since you're listening, I don't even know if you're listening to me on bbsradio.com, iTunes, Stitcher. I don't know how you're listening to the show, so it's unlikely I would see you raise your hand. But mentally, picture a room. How many people get in the mail, say, at least once a month, come to our Social Security seminar? I'm betting it's a bunch of you. Here's my advice. If it's at Ruth Chris and you want a free steak, it might be worth going for the free steak. Generally speaking, the people giving those seminars are licensed similarly to me in the fact that they're insurance agents. Then these seminars have been phenomenal income makers for these guys. I'm not kidding you. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with claiming strategies. In any mathematical equation, did I just say mathematical? And I always tell you I'm going to keep things simple. There's different things you have to know to get an accurate result. Whether you should claim Social Security at age 62, at age 65, or at age 70, or somewhere in between, there's a factor that I don't know, and that you don't know, and that nobody knows. It's called, well, how long will you be drawing it? Meaning, sorry to bring this up, at some point, you move to the next life. Assume room temperature, no longer fog mirrors, pass away. Hey, it's going to happen to all of us. You might as well get used to it. Well, you don't know. So you'll hear people say, wait to age 70, you get almost double what you would at age 62. Well, maybe, maybe not. What if you pass away at 69 and you never claim Social Security? They don't send a check to make up for what you didn't take. Well, what if you wait? Now you're getting double per month than you won, right? No, not really, because what you need to do is add up all the money you got from age 62 to 70, or from 65 to 70, or 66 to 70, whatever years you took it early. Not early, but but rather than waiting all the way to age 70, add that all up, and until you get at least that much from the payments you receive starting at 70, you're just breaking even. And don't forget to include the number of months that you would have continued getting the money at the original payment that you started at 62 or 65 with cost of living increases beyond. I generally find you need to live to at least 78. 78. Okay, well, our average life expectancy these days is above that, so maybe it does make sense to wait. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter what it is for most people. It matters what it is for you. I would rely less on professional guidance and more on, if you're still working and don't need the money, then for heaven's sakes, wait. If you're not working and you've retired and you have enough where you don't need to draw the Social Security, then you have a choice. Do it one way or the other. Talk to your CPA. See how it will affect you from a tax standpoint with the other things that you're doing. That's when you do the planning. Or, here's the other scenario. You're 62, you get laid off or decide to retire, and you don't have enough money. Well, I'd suggest you might want to run down to the Social Security office and let them know that you'd be very interested in starting your benefit package. Social Security claiming strategies, I told you I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. The bottom line is, unless you can give or put into a calculator your date of death, nobody knows when the best time for you to claim Social Security is. You know, when you're on the air, when you're speaking to a microphone, there's a thing called an equalizer. And as I look down at that last sentence, I'm wondering why I'm talking like Captain Kirk. I don't know why. Clearly, I need some espresso. Well, we're coming up towards the end of the show in about 15, 20 minutes. So I guess I can wait. We're going to shift topics when we come back. But before we do, Jewel actually has a song about, sort of, Social Security.
You love him if you put him in your will, but who will save your souls when it comes to the flowers now? Oh, save your souls at those lies that you told, boy. And who will save your souls if you won't save? To bustle and try to cuss him. The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another tower went up where the homeless had their homes. So we prayed with many different gods as there are flowers, but we call religion our friend. We're so worried about saving our souls, afraid that God will take his toll, that we forget to begin. Say
You know, based on what we've been discussing, I thought it probably was a good time in the show to throw in Jewel, Who Will Save Your Soul. Well, hey, don't get depressed about it. It's the way the program has always worked. It took care of your parents and your grandparents. It'll take care of you. It's just it may need some work and some cooperation of the two parties who currently occupy Washington. There, see, who will save your soul? What a perfect phrase. Okay, let's move to a different topic. I, as you know, am based in Florida. I work in both Virginia and Florida, and I haven't done the disclosure on the show yet, so let's fit that in. My name is Paul Puckett. I'm an investment advisor representative of Q1 Advisors, based in Virginia Beach, serving clients in Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. I'm also an independent insurance agent, serving clients in Florida and in Virginia. Well, why did I bring up Florida? You probably are picturing sunny golf courses, beautiful sunny beaches, sailing. There's all sorts of things you can do in Florida. It's a wonderful state. Well, I mean, you know, we have alligators and snakes and weird bugs, but it's a great state to hang out in, even in the summer when it's very hot. So I was just going to ask my listening audience, if you would, I've managed to build an ark big enough for my stuff and those that I care about. I'm having difficulty with the rudder assembly. So if you, okay, I'm kidding. Take a look at radar sometime. When the sun came out this morning, and I doubt it will be around all day, I actually had to try to figure out where my sunglasses were when Harry and I headed down to get some espresso. We have had some rain, let me tell you. Rain is good. Rain is good. But, you know, it gets old when it's continuous. And then it teases you and looks like it's going away and comes back 20 minutes later. That's August on the southwest coast of Florida. We call this normal. Occasionally you get a real heavy-duty load of rain in August on the southwest coast of Florida. 2 years ago, there was so much rain that one of the puddles near where I was staying at the time, the frogs laid their eggs. The eggs hatched into tadpoles. The tadpoles turned into frogs before that massive puddle finally dried out, which is why Harry and I came up with the name Frogpocalypse. Frogpocalypse. Not a good thing, but it was amusing because it also brought out all the snakes to eat all the frogs that hatched during Frogpocalypse. And so let's just say, when it rains in Florida, watch your step. Speaking of watching your step, you knew I had to be going somewhere, right? You know, I've been in the industry for coming up on 30 years. I began as an agent at Mass Mutual and quickly discovered that when you don't know anybody and you're in a new town, life insurance back then basically was, would you like to buy a term insurance policy, a universal policy, or a whole life policy? That was pretty much it. And, you know, by definition, what is the topic when you're thinking about life insurance? Well, taking care of your family if something happens to you, setting up a legacy for a favorite charity, whatever it may be. But, you know, it's death. It's death. So if you don't know anybody, if you thought I was smart, my first real career job in the financial services industry was as an agent at Mass Mutual in a town where I didn't know anybody. And we wonder why I ultimately went to banking. In banking, I was a trust officer and a private banker. Now, bank trust departments are fiduciaries. We've talked a little bit about what fiduciary means. It's a term I can't avoid. Sorry, I'd make it easier for you, but it is what it is. Basically, a fiduciary must put their client's interest ahead of their own. Think about that. They must put your interests ahead of their own. That sounds really good, and it is, often. But there's something I think you need to be careful of. And I thought of this because, you know, it helps. It helps when you're a beginner in the field of radio and internet broadcasting and doing a show to listen to people who do shows all the time. And it didn't matter what show I was listening to. There were some consistent advertisements that came from two different types of financial services professionals, and I thought just for fun, I would warn you of both. So let's start with the ad I heard on at fill in the blank asset management, whatever the name of the firm was. We're fiduciaries, and that means we must act in your best interest. Call us today. Well, it made me think about something when I was driving down the road. You know, when you look at a registered investment advisor firm and the investment advisor representatives who work for that firm, very, very few are configured the same way that I am, because they all look at me at conferences and go, "You're what? You're an insurance agent in addition to being an investment advisor? How can you do that? You're not really a fiduciary." And this is my reply to them. So I'm going to give you, this is how I reply to them in person. I'm not sandbagging here on the air and going after them. I am an insurance agent because I am a fiduciary, because if I don't have access to and knowledge of insurance products, how am I going to be able to do what's in my client's best interest? So I'm not telling you to be gun-shy of those who tout and advertise their fiduciary status on radio ads. I am suggesting that should you currently be working with one or meeting with one, when you ask them whether you should invest some of your money in an insurance product, for instance, cash value life insurance for estate planning purposes maybe, guaranteed death benefit, an annuity instead of a bond, you know, what's wrong with guaranteed principal? You might ask them what their knowledge of those products is and why they don't recommend them. How do I know they're not going to recommend them? Well, okay, I know of some very reputable firms who are willing to sacrifice their investment management fee so that you can put some of your money into a commission product sold by somebody else. You did get that, right? They can't charge a management fee. They can charge a planning fee if they want, but they can't charge a management fee on the money you move out of their management into an insurance product. That, I think, sometimes, even though it shouldn't, affects the advice you hear from a non-insurance licensed or affiliated investment advisor, fiduciary, who says they're acting in your best interest, but may not be. Okay, I'm less concerned about that particular type of advertisement and manager than I am the other. Oh boy, I tell you, you know, the retirement whatever. I don't want to name anybody specifically, and if I do, it's by accident because I don't really remember. But, you know, the retirement man, the retirement guru, the firm that focuses on your retirement. Okay, for heaven's sakes, for your sake, for your children's sake, for your spouse's sake, for somebody's sake, should you go to a Social Security seminar put on by a life insurance agent who claims to be a retirement expert, and he does not, or she does not, or somebody at their firm does not, have a securities license, preferably as an advisor, not a broker, but, you know, hey, there's lots of good brokers out there, too. If they don't have any licensing, training, or experience in the securities market, how are they going to know enough to give you advice on how much you should keep in the market and how the money in the market should be managed? Well, I'll tell you exactly what they're going to do. They're going to do their best to terrify you. You don't want to be in the market. You're retiring. If you put all your money in Arger Barger's indexed annuity and indexed life products, you'll have guaranteed principal. You can never lose a dime. Why would you take a risk? Okay, now, please don't take that snippet from the show and play to somebody and say that's what Paul says, all right? I was doing that as an example. You've heard them. I've heard them. That is not someone acting in your best interest. Make sure your advisors have experience and training in what they do. I don't care about designations. I don't have one, so maybe that's why I say that. I've had them in the past and dropped them. I'm more concerned about what level of experience do they have, and do they work with clients like you? Well, I mean, I think that's important, don't you? So, quick recover. I was joking about building an ark. The sun is out. Florida is not going to flood today. I was serious totally about fiduciaries are supposed to act in your best interest, but for heaven's sakes, make sure they don't have a conflict of interest when it comes to losing assets under management fees because they tell you, yep, you should pay off your mortgage. You should buy that insurance product, even though when you do, I take a pay cut. It's a good question to ask because as optimistic and trusting as I highly recommend you be, you should still verify and you still make sure that the people you work with have the knowledge, the experience, the ethics, and the obligation and the understanding of their obligation to you to give you the service that you deserve. Huh. Just a thought. I wish I could play this song. I really do. I'll put a link to it on my website. But there was a hysterical song that has to do with the upcoming election that I wish I'd played last week. So, for now, sorry. I can't. It would have been fun. With everything going on, I just want you to keep one thing in mind, if you don't mind. Your life and your time are far more valuable than your money. So please make sure you do your best to enjoy your life. Take your time to go do some things that are fun. Yes, spend a little time figuring out when to claim your Social Security, what you should be invested in, etc. But once you get your plan set up, just reevaluate it periodically. Monitor it quarterly. We've talked about this. And please, if anyone tells you somebody stole the money out of the Social Security Trust Fund, remember, you can't steal what you already have. All right, thanks for joining us again on Getting There with Paul Puckett. I'm glad you are here. Feel free to email me with any suggestions you have on topics I should cover for the show at paul@gettingthere.life. Have a great week. Talk to you next week.